They were the heroes from the future. Teenagers protecting the universe from those that would sow the seeds of chaos. Each had unique powers and abilities. And though they often had their differences, they came together to save the day as the Legion of Superheroes. Now, you can be a part of their adventures and learn the history of the future in the Legion Clubhouse.
Matthew, the Legionnaires have been thrown into space prison.
What? What did they do, Steven?
Well, we're going to find out in this week's installment of the Legion Clubhouse.
Dun, dun, dun.
Adventure Comics number 344, The Super Stalag of Space. Published May 1966. Written by Edmund Hamilton, with art by Kurt Swan. Trying to free one of their own from imprisonment, the Legion is captured as well.
Matthew, do you remember a movie that came out in 1966? It had James Gardner. It had all the popular stars of the day. And they were all thrown into a German concentration camp during World War II. And their job was to escape. And that movie was called The Great Escape.
I do remember that, although not from 1966, because we were actually born 5 years later.
Well, I remember that movie that came out in 1966. I also remember this really, really weird take on The Great Escape that was turned into a comedy series.
Yes, Hogan's Heroes. Oh, my God. What a crazy, mixed up, unbelievable show. Ugh.
Yeah. Hogan's Heroes came out in 1965.
Right.
The Super Stalag of Space came out in 1966.
Yes.
And like this week's comics, Adventure Comics 344 and 345, come right out and say, hey, if you watch Hogan's Heroes, you know what our Legion of Superheroes, are, you know, what kind of trouble they're in the Super Stalag of Space.
Yeah, Stalag 17, I think, came out in 1964 or 65. Mm-hmm. The Great Escape was 63, but even so, this is an amazingly weird Legion story. This is not something that you would expect to see with a bunch of happy future teens eating ice cream in the Nine Planets ice cream parlor. This is actually pretty desperate. It's, as Legion stories go, it's really dire straits. I mean, it literally starts with the Legion sounding the literal klaxons, the alarms. Something terrible has happened. Brainiac 5 is a prisoner of war.
What has he done? What has he done? We don't know. And so all the Legionnaires all climb aboard their giant spaceship and go rocketing off to a little asteroid where they are subsequently captured and thrown into space prison.
It's a trap.
By Nardo.
Nardo Polo, the greatest marble player in the
world. Nardo.
Remember?
What a horrible name.
But the thing about Nardo that's important is Nardo may be the first truly evil, truly effective villain we have seen the Legionnaires face.
Oh, yeah, because he is like, he's got, number one, he's got three eyes, right?
Right.
He's got nuclear energy running through his veins. Mm-hmm. He's got a really ugly face, really bad hair, and he hates the rule of law. He comes right out in this first issue, 344, and basically says, I hate everything that you guys stand for. I hate laws.
I hate goodness and power and heroes. And this is very important. Nardo's third eye ain't just for show. It allows him to shoot laser beams. It allows him to see an invisible kid. Mm-hmm. It allows him to see through the disguise of Chameleon Boy. As far as just flat out power sources go, with the exception of the Time Trapper, who we really haven't seen do anything nefarious, Nardo may be the greatest threat faced by the Legion to date.
So what has happened is Nardo has all of these mindless followers, right? Mm-hmm.
And who are clones of him.
Yeah, who are clones of him. I mean, just these horrible followers. And he puts he separates them. He puts the girls in one prison and the boys in another prison.
Yep.
And he is forcing them to build a wall.
But while they're in the prison, the Legionnaires actually find that Nardo doesn't just hate the Legion. He hates heroes of all worlds, which means that he has Weight Wizard, Blockade Boy, Plant Lad, all characters.
Yeah, Shadow Kid.
Shadow Kid, who, yeah, Shadow Kid's important. All of these guys who we've never heard of before, but the Legion clearly have.
I do have a lot of questions about this, because when the Legionnaires get thrown into the super prison and they're forced to build a wall, Brainiac's already been there, and he's like, hey, I want to introduce you guys to Plant Lad and Shadow Kid and Blockade Boy and Weight Wizard and the rest. The question I have is it just common for people to just give themselves names, or is there an implication that Brainiac 5 has kind of conscripted them to be temporary Legionnaires?
He refers to them as heroes of many worlds. So my read on it, my interpretation is these are local heroes who haven't joined the Legion, but are probably, if not Legion material, maybe Legion adjacent. These are guys who have local beats, for lack of a better word. And they hang out on their own planets and do their thing. And one of them, Shadow Kid, is an important figure in Legion lore.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
How is that?
Well, the thing about Shadow Kid is that Shadow Kid is Grev Malor of planet Talok 8.
Okay.
Or Talok VIII.
Right.
Now, we have not met her yet, but there is a Legionnaire coming in just a few issues.
Mm-hmm.
Shadow Lass.
Oh, are they related?
Or are
they just from the same planet?
They are related and from the same planet. Depending on the telling, Grev Malor, Shadow Kid, is either the brother or the cousin of Shadow Lass. Although Talok 8 is a primitive planet, he may be both.
Right. Okay.
This is Shadow Lass and her uncle Dad. But
okay,
Grev, the Shadow Kid, is actually her stand-in as the planetary protector of Talok 8.
Yeah, and he's a lot like Shadow Lass, who again we'll meet. Blue skin, dark kind of purple clothing, belts and hair and all that kind of stuff.
Yep.
It's a really interesting look, and I do like Shadow Lass a lot, and I can't wait till she shows up.
Yeah, because if nothing else, she makes Nightgirl amazing.
Right. So Nardo, along with all of these people that look just like him.
Right. Nardo and the Nardolites.
Right. They're forcing the Legion to build a wall, which
right.
I'm it's explained that he needs to build a wall to keep these creatures out.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, it's not really clear on why the wall needs to be built beyond that. I mean, it's not like they're trying to keep prisoners in. It's not like he's rounding up prisoners, just going out and saying, hey, I'm a private prison open for business. Send me your worst villains from around the place. I'm really unsure of what is driving horrible Nardo.
Well, it's the question of why do we climb Mount Everest? Because it is there,
I guess. And Nardo certainly wants to build this prison and build that wall. And so they go outside into the mine pits, and who happens to be there? None other than Superboy.
Superboy. This guy is serious business, because he has captured, well, he hasn't really. It's not actually Superboy.
Well, yeah, that's the other thing, because, and this brings up another really crazy concept that I hadn't really thought about until this point. So, you know, Cosmic Boy is like, Superboy, how come you just can't fly out of here? How did you let yourself get caught? And Superboy's like, I'm not really Superboy. I'm a Durlin. I'm just like one of the Chameleon Boy. I'm just like one of him. I've got powers, and I turned myself into Superboy so I could stop Nardo what he was doing. And then he zapped me and I'm frozen in this state. I don't have my powers to un Superboy.
Yep.
And I'm thinking, okay, first of all, in the future, everybody loves and adores Superman and Superboy.
Mm-hmm.
But here is just an average Joe Durlin who's doing identity theft.
It's more of, I think, a tribute.
Ah, sure.
This is just a tribute, but it does make for a shocking moment. And I suspect.
I mean, Durlins can impersonate anyone. I mean, we really, looking back now, I mean, he's stealing Superboy's identity. What is preventing a Durlin, besides morals, from going around, turning themselves into, you know, Cosmic Boy or one of the others, and then going
or
up to
say Shrinking Violet,
Shrinking Violet, and then going over and saying, "Hey, how are you doing? You may have heard of me. I'm Superboy. How about we go out on a date?"
In about 150 issues, you and I will be calling back to this episode. But I think this is what I'm going to explain to you, the secret origin of why this is happening.
Mm-hmm.
In the 1960s at DC Comics, it was common practice to go to an artist and commission a cover.
Oh, sure. Sure.
And based on what's on the cover, then you get what happens in the issue. And this is clearly an example where the cover shows Superboy being murdered by a kryptonite force beam.
Mm-hmm.
And this is their way of saying, well, that's a really shocking moment. How do we do this without punking out our most powerful hero? How do we do this without, you know, to use the wrestling term, burying the Boy of Steel? It turns out it's not the Boy of Steel at all. However, it is a legitimate death.
Oh, yeah.
So when Nardo and the Nardolites hit their kryptonite force beams, that Superboy is D.E.D.
Yeah.
He is ceased to be. He has rung down the curtain and joined the bleeding Kryptonian choir invisibule. He is an ex-parrot.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sad.
So just like every other prison escape movie, just like The Great Escape, they have to come up with a plan of escape, and Brainiac is put in charge. And of course, you've got all these other named heroes that are hanging around.
Yep.
But Nardo somehow keeps figuring out that they're planning to escape and know that they're going to, I mean, this literally, ladies and gentlemen, this is lifted right out of The Great Escape, because they keep bringing in the different guys and saying, "Hey, look, we know you as the allies. It is your mission to escape. Just tell us what your plan is. And then we'll, you know, we'll make good and all these things. And you guys don't have to get injured. Our guys can, you know, not get injured as well. It'll all be good. Let's just wait out this war." And of course, the allies are like, "Screw you, Germany."
Yeah.
And that's what's going on here. And so in order to try to torture Brainiac 5 into revealing their plan of escape, he's put into a torture chamber where all these visions, these horrible visions of things that should scare Brainiac 5, mm-hmm. are flashed before his face. And we get, holy crap, this may be my favorite Kurt Swan page ever.
Right.
We get shot after shot of Brainiac going crazy as these things are being flashed into his face and he's questioning his reality. And here's the most amazing thing. Brainiac 5 is Jimmy frickin' Stewart. Look at that. And tell me that that isn't Jimmy Stewart a la Vertigo or
Rear Window.
Rear Window, Matthew.
Yeah. It's a beautiful page. And the thing that's really great about it is that it kind of raises an important question that we deal with later in the Legion run. Does having a 12th level computer mind make you less susceptible to this kind of psychological torture or more susceptible? Because it really seems to be something that Brainiac has to put a Herculean effort into breaking free of. And even then, there's this moment where you're just like, is he still a little messed up? Because he comes back to the dormitory, the barracks, and he's like, "One of you is a traitor." And his hair's all messed up and he's completely mm-hmm. angry and almost mm-hmm. out of character.
Mm-hmm.
And then he, you know, smooths his hair back and gets himself together. But
yeah,
it's a very shocking moment for Brainiac.
So we have Plant Lad and he's expendable. So if he gets fed up with this crazy stuff from the Nardos, he can just plant out and they will kill him. And that's the end of it. And we've lost another hero.
Yeah. And it is interesting because it wasn't that long ago that we saw the return of Beast Boy
mm-hmm.
and Beast Boy dying as basically a plot point, but a relatively clever one. I think that was also a Hamilton story. And I feel like had we, you know, somewhere along the line, had these been either heroes we'd met before, or rejected legionnaires, or just something that had been set up, I feel like it may have had so much more weight, because Plant Lad, who, by the way, can turn into plants, not just control them.
Right.
Plant Lad's death is kind of a moment where you're like, "Oh, that's shocking. That could have been Element Lad. That could mm-hmm. have been Chameleon Boy." But it might be more shocking if that person getting killed was, say, Kid Psycho, or Evolvo Lad, or someone we had seen, or Timberwolf, someone we mm-hmm. had seen before.
Or maybe it's all there as a setup for the death of Matter Eater Lad.
No, don't you dare. Don't you threaten
here's the thing. This issue is iconic for a couple of reasons. Number one, you've got Nardo and his crazy prison scheme. But this issue also features an escape attempt by Matter Eater Lad and Blockade Boy, who crawl into a tunnel. And the way that they're going to escape is by having Matter Eater Lad chomp his way and create a tunnel and, and get out of prison. This is, I think, was this one of the early appearances by Matter Eater Lad where he's literally eating the bars of the prison cell? This is just like this. And there are two panels of him just noshing at the the underground that have that are super meme worthy. So if you're wondering what the heck that weird guy is knobbing on something that looks like a butt or knobbing on something that looks like something else, that is where those images come from, is this issue, 344.
And it's interesting because, first of all, Matter Eater Lad's sleeves, which are generally yellow, are green throughout this issue, which means that if, say, for instance, you were a Legion purist like me and you wanted to have an image of Matter Eater Lad being superheroic, you would literally have to go in and edit his sleeves back to yellow using, you know, Photoshop. Not that I have or did or, you know, check out the hero histories at Legion of Superheroes at majorspoilers.com.
Yeah.
But it's interesting to see this because this is Tenzel's finest hour. This, I think, is the moment it so far.
Okay. Yeah. So far, at least you said so far. I'm hoping you weren't saying in all of Matter Eater Lad history that this is his finest. Yes, I would agree with you there.
From his origins in 1962 to this point, June of 1967 or May of 1966 to this point, May of 1966, this is his finest hour because normally he's like, oh, well, I'll just bite this gun or now I'm a child and I'll eat this candy. But this is a moment where they are trapped. Everyone's back is to the wall. That Superboy has been seen to be murdered. So what does he do? He eats his way to freedom, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes, he does. He does indeed. And when they come out, they find out what happened to all of the female Legionnaires.
Yep.
If you enjoy the show, we would appreciate your support. You can find out more and become a Legion Clubhouse member at patreon.com/majorspoilers.
So we've talked about the Hall of Fame classics, the Superboy reprints that show up.
Oh, right, that show up at the end of this.
Yeah, this issue is the last Hall of Fame classic.
Oh, thank goodness.
Don't be that guy.
No. I mean, there's actually a point in, I forget which letters column, it's either in 344 or 345, someone is writing into the letters column and saying, you got Superman on the cover of Adventure Comics and he's barely in there. And it's really Legion of Superhero stuff. What are you guys doing with Superboy on the cover of all of this stuff? Put the Legion on there.
Yep.
And a lot of it is because we did have these Superboy backup stories.
Yep. And the Superboy backup stories literally end in Adventure Comics 345. And Adventure Comics goes on for another 150 issues, much of that being Legion or Supergirl or Superman related. You never see these reprints come up again. And part of that is, well, you know, the entire book is dedicated to the Legion. But I think part of that is also as you get into the 60s and 70s, the page count of your comics is going down.
Yeah.
So they don't have the room for a 9-page backup story. And honestly, in the collector's market where things are starting to be reprinted and things are starting to have continuity, the idea of reprinting a story from 8, 9, 10 years ago isn't what it used to be. It isn't quite the same thing. But those Hall of Fame classics, I know you love them.
Some of them are good. I mean, if you have not, I mean, if you get your hands on some of these old Adventure Comics, now the Hall of Fame classics do not appear in the omnibus collections at all. But I mean, if you are someone who can't afford to go that far back into comic book history and buy those original Superboy stories, picking them up in an Adventure Comics reprint is a great way to relive some of that stuff. It is dated. I mean, even by 1960s terms, you're reading some of these and it's clear that these are 1950s stories.
Oh, yes. They are definitely stories from before the Silver Age.
Yeah. The other thing that, you know, we're starting to see a shrinkage in page count. I wonder if some of that has to do with, as we've talked before, the decline of the PSAs that DC has been running in this, as well as the decline of other ads that might be appearing in comics. Now, we've always seen the little, you know, the little X-ray specs and the Sea Monkeys type stuff. But we're really starting to see a decrease in full size ads, as well as the half page. Here's the hobby hints, or the the Caps Hobbies hints that have appeared in, I think, most of the Adventure Comics that we have read at this point.
And Caps Hobby hints appeared in the majority of DC Comics in this era.
Yeah. So when you are cutting that out, you're shrinking your page count automatically. So that really doesn't mean you have extra pages to include the Superboy reprints. That's interesting. Also, Matthew, there was another thing that appears in these comics at the time that you like to reference a lot. And that has to do with free tickets to Palisade Park or something like that.
Yes. Palisades Park was a pretty legendary amusement park in New Jersey, actually in the Palisades of New Jersey, which means it kind of overlooks New York City.
Right.
But the thing about the Palisades Park was, I remember reading comics in my youth, reading back issues and things, and looking at this and going, what the heck?
It's like
being distributed across the United States of America and into other countries. But they're offering 85 cents off the admission to Palisades Amusement.
Oh, no. Here's Superman going, be my guest at Palisades Park, New Jersey. This coupon entitles you to free admission plus two free rides, backs, and parking. So you're getting a whole bunch of stuff if you just cut up your comic book and take it to Palisades Park, New Jersey.
Well, the Palisades Park always had free parking. That's part of the reason why they didn't make money and eventually went out of business, from what I understand. But when you actually go and look up, and I am not like a big, you know, amusement park guy.
Yeah.
But I like to look into these things. And Palisades Park is one of those things that pops up repeatedly, because I don't know if you remember the song.
Yeah, yeah.
Palisades Park, written by Chuck Berry from The Gong Show.
Right.
And this is something where I'm like, oh, well, is that the thing from the song? Is that the thing from the comic book? It is. And if you had a copy of Action Comics 345, you could go to Palisades Amusement Park. You could get a free ride on the Caterpillar.
Which I think this is the same as that little kid's dragon ride that you see at most amusement parks that has some up and downs, and it turns around in a loop and it goes around twice. It's a great ride to scare little kids on, because it's like their first kind of scary roller coaster. So I think the Caterpillar is exactly like that.
I agree. And again, when you go and you look at the rides that they're offering, it shows you that these books are definitely aimed at children.
Oh, yeah, because the other ride that you get is the jet plane, which I don't know if jet plane is the one where it's the cables that are hooked to the plane and it takes you up and spins you around. Or my guess is it's the other carnival ride where you sit in a little, airplane, and you've got a little stick that you can pull up and down, and it raises this arm up and down, and they tell you don't bounce. They tell you not to bounce the plane, you know, where you pull it back and forth and go gunk, 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 gunk. And it's got a little gun on the front with a little buzzer that goes.
The Palisades Park jet plane was actually a pretty big ride. Each of the jets had room for like 10 people. It had five seats.
Okay.
And it would raise you up and spin you around. So it was literally just like you were flying in a plane. It's one of those elevated rides that takes you up. But it's also 1956, 57, 66. You're just hanging from cables.
Yeah.
Do you remember the aerodrome ride at Worlds of Fun?
Yeah, I do. Until they took it away.
It's like that, only not as high, because the aerodrome ride at Worlds of Fun was wildly inappropriately dangerous.
Also, we were very small. But I do remember that thing going up like super high.
Very small.
No, I remember that being super high at Worlds of Fun. Then they took it down.
The aerodrome ride would take you up a good three stories.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. All the fun things that you find in old comics.
Adventure Comics number 345, The Execution of Matter Eater Lad, published June 1966, written by Edmund Hamilton with art by Kurt Swan. Tenzo Kem faces a firing squad while his friends rot in jail. But don't count the Legion out yet.
Issue 345 has something that you rarely see in Adventure Comics, and that is a previously in section.
Yes, previously on X-Men.
So we spend almost the full two pages. I mean, we see where the boys and girls are separated on the first page. But then you go into the second page of this story, and it is a recap of everything that happened in the first issue.
Yeah, including Matter Eater Lad eating his way out of the Stalag of Space and his arms being green.
The other cool thing about this, Matthew, and this is really, really important. If 344 had the first meme-worthy Matter Eater Lad biting something inappropriate, this issue has another one of those, and super credit to Kurt Swan, because instead of just reprinting the previous panels, he redraws them. Now, granted, some of them are from a similar angle, such as the Superboy getting shot by the kryptonite rays while everyone looks on.
Right.
But every single one of these is a different angle, and that makes this page, even though it's a recap page, so much more impressive.
Yeah. We talked about when they had that first big two-parter, we talked about how that was kind of the example, the building blocks for what would be the multi-part Legion crossover. This is where it happens. And this issue's use of that continuity, first of all, tells us that in 1966, they did not expect that the kids were going to be able to go and find 344 on the stands.
Right. Right.
So that they had to tell you in 345, at least the quick recap of what was happening. But what happened in the previous issue is now officially not only important, but absolutely critical to understanding this issue's story. And that's something that's new that we'll see more and more and more.
Yeah, we see Nardo, who's the bad guy. He wants them to build a wall for his prison so the horrible monsters can't crash into his prison. I mean, this guy is so bad. There's a panel on page three where he's literally wringing his hands together in pleasure for the fact that he killed Blockade Boy.
I've murdered Blockade Boy.
Oh yeah, that would be a perfect voice.
Yeah,
that's how he talks.
So my name Nardo, is Nardo. Nardo kills Blockade Boy.
Yes,
and instead of just shooting Matter Eater Lad, he's like, well, I'm going to make an example of him like tomorrow or something. We're going to lock him up and then I'll shoot him at dawn in front of everybody so that everyone understands that I mean business.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm not saying that I ever want to be an evil despot running an underground prison for superheroes, but it's not a bad idea when you have
horrible.
When you have these characters who are known for heroic urges, not only having one of them killed, but previous doing the whole public execution of someone who dared to defy you. I think it's likely, or it seems like it would be more likely to damage their resolve than just having these guys running around.
Yeah. So one of the things about Hogan's Heroes, the TV show, and the Hogan's Heroes, again, if you weren't paying attention in the first half hour of the show.
Right.
Hogan's Heroes was this comedy that ran, I want to say, on CBS or NBC. I forget which one.
I want to say CBS.
But it had these funny adventures of these prisoners of war pulling hijinks on the Nazis in their Stalag, in their war crime prison. And so they had all sorts of things. They had hidden radios. They had secret tunnels running all over the base. And this issue kind of, once again, references Hogan's Heroes by Brainiac going, I have built this flying bug that will go and spy on Nardo and the Weight Wizard.
General Burkhalter.
Yeah, who I suspect of being the traitor.
And he is correct.
Let's talk about Weight Wizards. And he's called Weight Wizard because he has the ability to adjust the weight of things, not because he's on Weight Watchers or because he's a fat guy.
Or a formerly fat guy.
Yes.
Right. He worked out.
Essentially, and I don't know if it's because Weight Wizard may be too precious. I mean, he's got his hair is perfectly coiffed. Is that the word? It's perfectly combed. He looks like a pretty boy. He's all kind of muscular. Yep. And Nardo's basically like, look, if you don't tell me what's going on over there, I'm cutting off your extra rations.
Yep.
I think there's a better way to make him. I mean, yes, he's a traitor. And yes, he does try to escape. And yes, he does get his at the end. But I can't help but think that we could have made him a little bit more
nefarious.
Not nefarious. We don't want to make Weight Wizard nefarious. We want to kind of make him sympathetic. Maybe he's got a sister over at the girls' camp, and the reason why he's spying on them is because he's worried about his sister.
Well, I mean, he is a hero. He's just a kind of a selfish one. Yeah. And I don't know. The thing that's interesting, though, is his power is not just Light Lass and Starboy combined. He can make himself weigh anything.
Oh, yeah. Light as a feather, stiff as a board.
Right. And leap over the heads of the other superheroes, which is, you know, kind of awful. But what are you going to do?
Well, he eventually escapes. I mean, once everyone finds out he's a traitor, they try to capture him. And even Nardo is like, you used your powers. And that is verboten here in this camp. So therefore, I'm going to make an example of you. And Weight Wizard tries to escape. And he finds these giant pachyderms that have been attacking the camp.
Fenders.
But he eventually stumbles into the swamp where one of the giant plants grabs him and eats him.
And gruesomely eats him. I mean, they don't show blood and guts and anything, but if you've ever seen something eaten by one of those Venus flytraps or the pitcher plants, it ain't pretty. They are dissolved into a stew.
Oh, yeah. My youngest son did a whole year of research into carnivorous plants. He's even growing them in his bedroom right now. We haven't been able to find the cat for a couple of days, but he's growing
this
carnivorous plants because he's
a supervillain origin.
Maybe. I worry about the boy. But he's totally into carnivorous plants. He is in the advanced class at school. He's in first grade, was in first grade at the time of this recording. But he spent a whole year just doing research on carnivorous plants and would come and tell me all the gruesome details of what happens. And I hope that he does not turn into Nardo, because Nardo, knowing his history of the universe and knowing his ancient Earth history, actually lifts a line from Batman.
What?
Where he is being... So in the Batman comics, at one point, a guy falls into a vat of acid, and Batman looks down and says, "This is a fitting end for his ilk." And Nardo basically cribs that line by saying, the poisonous lilies finished him as I knew they would. That's a fitting end for him. I won't even have to send flowers for the funeral.
That is ice cold.
Oh, I know. Oh. Nardo is a... B.A. villain. He is so horrible.
And he gets even worse because Invisible Kid tries to go invisible and sneak away. Nardo can see him and shrinks him down to be eaten by, I think it's Goon, the alien from Titan A.E. Either that or it's a spider wearing some really cool joke glasses that he got.
Yes.
From the back of the comic book. This comic book. Yeah.
So a movie that came out in 1957, The Incredible Shrinking Man, has this man who is shrinking and gets attacked by spiders and rats and cats and has all these adventures. When I first saw Weight Wizard running through the jungle in that first panel before he gets eaten by the plants, the first thing that popped into my mind when I saw that is like, oh, this is kind of reminds me of like a scene from The Incredible Shrinking Man kind of movie. And then three pages later, Invisible Kid gets shrunk down into size, which I find very fascinating. The other thing that's also fascinating, both about The Incredible Shrinking Man and this issue, is The Incredible Shrinking Man is apparently, from my understanding, from the stuff that I've read, especially the book, is an allegory for the rise of feminism and shrinking masculinity. Yeah. And that's why he's the incredible shrinking man and keeps getting smaller and smaller and smaller, because he doesn't feel like he is being appreciated in society. Now, this is what I had read on a couple of different places and had heard on a couple of different shows. So if I'm wrong, please let me know. But I'm pretty sure it's an allegory for shrinking masculinity, because why is that important in this issue? Because the boys who have been trying to escape this entire time haven't been able to do it. And yet someone who is only 2/3 of what she once was is able to save the day.
Right. Duo Damsel is able to break free. Although I do have a question.
Okay.
The girls have been in this prison for 3 days as well.
They've been in a different prison, yes.
But they have been imprisoned by Nardo, and it doesn't seem like they've done anything. Why is Saturn Girl so passive about being, you know, forever trapped? It has literally been several days, and she's just now using her telepathic powers to contact Brainiac 5.
Well, see, I don't know. at the beginning of this issue, at the end of last issue, at the beginning of this issue, they don't know where anyone has been taken to. It's only when Matter Eater Lad eats his way out of the prison and they're standing up on that ridge that they look over and they see down. Oh, there's another prison down there that we didn't know about. That's where they're keeping the girls. And at the same time, when Blockade Boy is getting killed, the girls are looking up the cliff and they're like, oh my gosh, I think they just killed Matter Eater Lad. The boys must be nearby.
Could be.
So I think that's the out. But yes, and I don't know if Saturn Girl has a limit on the distance that she can communicate telepathically, but she does make a connection with Brainiac 5.
Finally. And the three Legion ladies actually show up and break the whole thing down. Light Lass makes the fence super light. Triplicate Girl, who is actually Duo Damsel now, duoplates herself. Is duoplate a word? Duplicates herself.
Yes.
Splits. One of her hides out. As soon as it's dark, she lifts the super light fence and escapes out into the streets and sends the elephants in and stampedes down the doors.
Yeah. Oh, no, it's crazy. And then, for whatever reason, Element Lad encases Nardo in lead, but doesn't encase his head. And then we find out his third eye also has another power, the ability to melt lead, heat vision. At which point he tries to kill everyone, including Matter Eater Lad, at which point the Deus Ex Goon Squad arrives.
Right. The Deus Ex Invulnerable.
Why do... I don't understand this, because this is the next thing. This is essentially the end of the issue. But I never understood why you send Mon-El, Superboy, and... Ultra Boy. Why do you send your three tanks out on missions? It makes no sense to send an entire team of tanks to deal with something that may need a brain, may need some finesse, may need a healer, may need a, you know, a clone person. But all the time, these three, Ultra Boy, Superboy, and Mon-El, are always going out on missions together. And I don't know if it's because we need to get rid of our tanks so that everyone else has to work to solve the problem.
Uh-huh.
Or if it's something else.
I think they smell bad. And the other Legionnaires just want them to go away. So they make up busy work for them to go and do with their super stinky muscles.
Well, it's interesting because I don't know if they've ever addressed Mon-El's brain damage that occurred when he crash landed on Earth and thought he was Superboy's older brother. Superboy himself is not. I know in the Silver Age, Superman is like super incredibly smart and he has an answer for everything. But right. Superboy is not super smart. Plus, he keeps getting his mind wiped every time he time travels.
Right.
So there's a question on his ability to comprehend what's going on.
A cumulative effect there.
Yeah. And then Ultra Boy is just like me smash.
Ultra Boy is not the brightest bulb at the bottom of the barrel. But I think, well, we know what the actual answer is.
Oh, sure we do. I'm just positing this. And I know some of our listeners are screaming, how dare you? I'm like, okay, just play along with us here for a minute as we have this discussion and as we talk about bigger things. It always leads to some bigger explanation. Trust me.
In the real world, it's obviously a question of how do we make Superman interesting? And
right.
That's fine. I mean, it's definitely something you have to take into account. And in the letters page of 345, someone writes in and actually says, you guys are using too many of these characters. Last issue, it was Superboy.
Oh, yeah.
This issue, it's like they're overexposing Brainiac 5 and Saturn Girl.
In fact, in the last episode of the Legion Clubhouse, we didn't get to the letters column, but there was an actual letter in there saying, hey, you guys should probably kill off some of these Legion members because you have too many of them.
No, they don't have too many. They have not nearly enough.
Correct. That's my answer to everything.
I think that the lesson of the Legion is that everybody has something to contribute. And I don't think that they're worried about conservation of invulnerable flying genius tanks because A, they'll show up in the last seconds and save the day. And B, even an invisible kid, chameleon boy, you know, Saturn Girl team is enough hero for most situations in universe. It's actually a vote of confidence in the fact that Duo Damsel and Bouncing Boy are just as heroic as Mon-El and Ultra Boy and have better haircuts.
Yeah. So just as Nardo is telling his followers to shoot and kill Matter Eater Lad, Superboy jumps in the way. But ricochet physics on this planet is a little bit different because instead of ricocheting at an angle, The laser beam wraps itself around Superboy and still strikes Matter Eater Lad. And once again, the Legion of Superheroes jinx, the curse, continues, Matthew.
Yes, because Matter Eater Lad is struck and somehow becomes super fat.
Can you explain that to me?
Okay, here's what it is. Are you ready?
Is it because his metabolism suddenly catches up to all that crap he's been eating?
Exactly. Well, not crap. It's actually, you know, earth. Rock and, yeah, and sure. Earth and stone. But that is the explanation that we're given. And the last panel is actually, I don't know if I'd call it ironic. It's what I like to call Alanis Morissette ironic.
Okay.
As skinny bouncing boy is like, oh, look, Matter Eater Lad, you're as fat as I used to be before I lost my powers. Matter Eater Lad has the same problem as bouncing boy in reverse.
So the question is, and again, this may be answered in a future installment of the Legion Clubhouse, or maybe we'll just answer it here. Does Matter Eater Lad still have his matter eating powers, or is he also going to take a bouncing boy? You need to take a leave of absence until we get this fixed, because we're listening to our readers who say we have too many Legion of Superheroes members.
He does go by the wayside. He does maintain his powers and he does come back. But unlike bouncing boy, he comes back a lot sooner than later.
Mm.
Two episodes down the line, kids.
We need to talk about Hamilton?
We do need to talk about Hamilton, because this is not just the last Edmund Hamilton written issue of Legion of Superheroes.
What?
This is one of Hamilton's last comic book scripts at all.
Oh, that's too bad. What happened? Did he die?
No, Edmund Hamilton had been working at DC since 1942.
Yeah.
And in 1966, he and his wife apparently moved west to Hollywood.
Oh.
And I don't know if he became a screenwriter or a scriptwriter, if he wanted to be. But basically, with the exception of Jerry Siegel, Hamilton has really been shepherding the Legion in this kind of this proto period, this early Legion stuff. And he's responsible for so much of what we recommend or what we recognize as the Legion of Superheroes.
Ah, interesting. Yeah, you know, his wife was a writer also. And so moving out west may have been tied to her writing work as well. Mm-hmm. But they did move out there and continued to write and produce work. Now, Hamilton died in 1977 from complications of kidney surgery.
Yep. But 1966, it's actually, this is not his very last script. His last script is a World's Finest comic that comes out a month after this issue of Adventure.
Mm-hmm.
But Edmund Hamilton basically is retiring from the comic book industry and closing up his chapter of the Legion of Superheroes with Adventure 345.
Oh, man, I really like Edmund Hamilton stuff. I really enjoy a lot of his stories, even though they do get a little crazy at times. And we've talked because of the cover issues with that. Mm-hmm. But Matthew, I'm really, really scared, because I think this means that we're going to get nothing but a long run of Jerry Siegel stories.
I have good news for you.
Oh?
One word.
Yes?
Shooter.
Well, I think on that note, I think it's time to wrap up this installment of the Legion Clubhouse. Matthew, what did we learn this week?
We learned that if you have a third eye, it better do something awesome.
I think we also learned that if you're going to force people to build a wall, it better be for a good reason other than to keep a bunch of elephants out.
And we also learned that you can kill Superboy in the future without destroying the entire space-time continuum, as long as you have a quick Deus Ex Machina in your back pocket.
That wraps it up for this installment of the Legion Clubhouse. Thank you so much for being part of our adventures. We can't wait to come back next week to talk more, or the next time, whenever it may be. Hello, future people. Oh, hello, Legion members.
Hello, Legion Fugitaires.
So until next time, I'm Identity Theft Lad.
And I'm Hamilton Bye-Bye Boy.
The Legion Clubhouse is a production of Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC, and is produced by Steven Schleicher. Your hosts were Matthew Peterson and Steven Schleicher. You can follow Matthew at Mighty King Cobra and Steven at Major Spoilers. You can follow this podcast on Twitter at Legion Clubhouse. If you have questions or comments, send them to podcast@majorspoilers.com. I'm Jason Inman. Until next time, eat it, Grandpa.
This podcast is copyright 2018 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.